This is BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare educational and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host, Brian Moore. In this episode, we're going to discuss Nexus Park as a case study of how adaptive reuse can transform a healthcare facility and a community. First, some background about this project. As a symbol of their commitment to shifting the focus from treating sickness to fostering wellness, the City of Columbus, Indiana partnered with Columbus Regional Health, CRH, to repurpose an aging mall into a modern healthcare facility called Nexus Park. Alongside with other partners, BSA designed the transformation of the former Fair Oaks Mall into a multi-use health and wellness site. The site focuses on CRH's integrated healthcare solutions approach. Additionally, the mall's prime location offered a unique opportunity for a hospital renovation, revitalizing a community landmark while expanding medical accessibility. 25% of the CRH-controlled Fair Oaks Mall transformation morphs the space into a health hub. This hub consolidates 15 physician practices consisting of primary care, specialty care, for example, OBGYN and audiology, complementary labs, and physical therapy. This strategic design enhances operational efficiency while encouraging collaboration with community partners, offering synergistic services adjacent to the health hub. David Lennart and Tim Spence. David Lennart is a PE and has his MBA. He is the VP of Strategic Facility Planning and Operations for Columbus Regional Hospital, working in facilities management for 30 years. Recognitions include the 2010 Facilities Manager of the Year from Today's Facilities Manager Magazine, the 2010 Vizient Supply Chain Excellence Recognition, 2007 ASHES Runner-Up Housekeeping Department of the Year, and 2008 Institute for Healthcare Improvement, IHI Quality Impact Recognition. Dave has spoken on multiple topic locations from patient satisfaction and employee engagement to disaster response and recovery, where he led the revival of Columbus Regional Hospital in 2008 from a historic flood, returning the hospital operations in 5 months. Tim Spence is the CEO of BSA and graduated from the University of Southern California with a Bachelor of Architecture degree. He holds several licenses and certifications, including AIA, FACHA, NCARB, LEED AP, BD plus C, and is a Lean Six Sigma Yellow Belt. And now, to our conversation. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Thanks for joining me. David, Tim, nice to see you both.
Nice seeing you too.
Nice to see you, Brian.
David, you're an engineer by training and you're very passionate about healthcare transformation. Can you share with our audience a little bit about your background and what drives your approach to facility planning?
Sure. So yes, I'm a background in mechanical engineering from Purdue University. And I think like any engineer, you get based upon formulas and algorithms. And one of the things in coming into healthcare over the last 30 years, I've developed a little algorithm myself. And it basically falls under, first, you want to take care of the patient. Then after that, you want to take care of the person taking care of the patient. Then you want to take care of the support people that are taking care of those people, taking care of the patient. Then finally, you got to look at still taking care of yourself. So I try to use that formula in how I approach most problems operationally and in development for Columbus Regional Health.
It's interesting. That sounds like an inverted pyramid, right? You're at the bottom and so many are on top that you're trying to support. That's really interesting. Also, I want to talk about this project and how this unique partnership between the City of Columbus and Columbus Regional Health came about. From my understanding, it was 75% city, 25% CRH joint venture. That's an unusual structure. What made this arrangement work for you guys?
I think that there is one, a long vision of how the city looks at investing within Columbus, starting with J.I. Miller way back in the 60s.
Okay.
And trying to make Columbus a special community, you know. And at that time, back in 2018, the mayor of Columbus, Jim Lennup, had a conversation with our CEO, Jim Bickle, and said, hey, you know, we have this old mall that's in the center of town. it's struggling. And, you know, retail, big box retail is not doing too well. You interested in seeing if we could turn this around and make it into something different, more of a benefit to the community? And the two gyms came together and said, yeah, I think that this is very worthwhile. And I think that's really what spurred that collaboration right off the bat, is that we have a municipality with the city very willing and recognizing the hospital as being a long-lived valued partner here within the community.
Yeah. It sounds like they were at the forefront of the mall transformation idea, because that's now like really been happening, but this is almost a decade ago, of course. So I was talking to somebody the other day. I myself have spent time in the Fair Oaks Mall when I was growing up. I'm from the north side now, but I grew up around the Trafalgar and Franklin area, and definitely remember walking around Fair Oaks Mall. So to hear that it's transformed into something so amazing is fantastic, of course. Tim, let's bring you into the conversation a little bit. From your standpoint as the project lead on BSA side, what initially drew you to this transformative project?
I think there's kind of three big ideas. One is the city of Columbus, and it's a really interesting city that, in my mind, kind of punches beyond its weight class. It's part of Bartholomew County, which is the middle of the cornfields, about 50,000 people, but it's got this architectural heritage that has some of the greatest architects of the 20th century. The Cernans, I.M. Pei, Venturi, Cesar Pelli, I'm just naming a few, Deborah Burke, S.O.M. And it kind of gets back to what Dave was talking about, that this leadership of Cummins and J. Irwin Miller, the conviction that good design could enrich everyday life and strengthen the community was really built in. And I remember, just like you, I obviously grew up on the West Coast, but I remember coming through this city when I was in architecture school, and I felt like it was architectural Disneyland. It made such an impression on me. And so what Cummins did was they paid, hopefully I got this right, Dave, they paid for the fees that resulted in about 80 plus significant works of modern architecture and public art. Wow. And so that's kind of every architect's dream. I would just say the two additional things to that are, TRH was a longtime client of BSA, and I really credit Gary Vance with that, who was involved in the project. But we've done numerous projects with CRH, Columbus Regional. One of them was the flood mitigation project back in 2008, helped add to their ED and so on. And then the third thing was a little bit of what Dave was talking about, was this intriguing project brief that talked about this dilapidated old mall and the ability to participate in the development and execution of this evolution, large-scale evolution, to help the city kind of get this piece of this relic within the city back into use and back into something that's meaningful to the community. Just like you mentioned that you had gone there as a kid, that was meaningful to you at that time. Mm-hmm. So it was like reinventing this. And all three of those things to us were super intriguing.
I want to piggyback off that, Tim, and come back to you, David, and say you had Columbus Regional Health kind of spread across multiple locations throughout town. What was driving the need for the consolidation?
We saw a benefit in trying to come back to owning more of our spaces. Back in 2015, we expanded Columbus Regional Health into an affiliate of Columbus Regional Health Physicians. And many of those, I'm going to say, specialty and primary care practices were in leased buildings throughout the community. Various needs of, I'm going to say, updating, improvements to their general infrastructure. And we said, you know, instead of making just pockets of investment all around, let's just build it into one. Get some economies of scale and start to build more of a medical community within CRHP. And that was probably the foundation of why we were looking at this small project as being something better for the community than what it currently had.
So we've established need for the community, some consolidation efforts, the unique partnership with the city. Tim, from an architectural standpoint, you're walking through this old Fair Oaks Mall. What did you see in terms of potential?
You're putting me on the spot, man, because that's a rough question. I mean, from an architectural standpoint, it was pretty rough. I'll be honest. It was teal accents, mauve tile, skylights with vintage bulbs around. It was really an outdated relic, almost so outdated it was cool again, like your grandpa's varsity letter jacket or something. But yeah, I think looking a little bit harder, you know, there were some things that jumped out to us and we were pretty excited about them. I think the opportunity to renovate and not replace a part of the city fabric, and in particular, it had some huge skylights that were just really wonderful. I mean, I've tried to put skylights in healthcare for a long, long, long time on that scale and have, in some cases, not been successful. The high volumes were volumes of space. So floor-to-floor heights, there was a lot to work with there. Expansive footprints from Vinket, anchored stores and such. The exterior had really convenient parking, and it was connected, potentially connected back to the city, you know. And so I think there were some things that we felt like, hey, these are worth keeping and worth maybe renovating and worth a look at how do we make them better.
As I've learned since I've been working here, all that connection to light, healing, the outside nature. So I'm glad you guys were able to keep a lot of those components. David, I understand for this project, you guys used IPD light with a bridging agreement. For the listeners and for myself, who may be unfamiliar with this approach, can you explain how you structured the team that way in that environment and why?
Yes. So I was starting here back in, I'm going to say the mid-2010s,
okay,
this thing called integrated project delivery, and trying to read up and understand what did that really do. Well, you know, the quick hits are saying better on time, better in cost, you know, same on quality, sort of high level metrics. But I think what really drew me to this was the need of collaborating beyond just the conversation of one entity. And as you pointed out to Tim in the last bit, you know, there's a lot of potential, but boy, what'd you see? It was rough.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring in a diverse group of individuals that can leverage a broad sense of creativity in order to transform this. So that's why we looked at having a common playing field between the architects, the engineers, interior design, the owner, and the contractor.
Right.
And we looked at this as saying no one's individual voices or ideas should be, one, bound by their lane of expertise or be avoided in speaking. So even though I'm an engineer, if I had, how can I say, a strong thought towards color or materiality,
yeah,
I should bring that up, okay? And don't feel that I should be, I'm going to say, just relegated to what I can lend. I wanted to hear beyond that. So that's what really had me, I'm very interested in wanting to move in this IPD direction. And the great thing is I had no clue. You know, I didn't practice this. And so I needed partners that had some experience with it. I think with the partners we were able to bring in, they helped to guide and form what needed to be that creative, collaborative, teamwork-oriented platform, top to bottom. And that's why we say that this is IPD-ish, IPD light, because it took away some of the, I'm going to say, sticky points and barriers that I'm going to say a pure IPD project still hasn't quite figured out. And yep. So we said, let's not worry about the barriers. Let's develop what we know we could work with. And that's really what we did.
Well, I love that answer. And you admitting, like, this is the first time I'm doing this. How do we get the right people I'm curious if your personal background has anything to do with the or influenced you on how you structured the teaming. And what I mean by that is you have a large family, and I do too. I'm a father of five, and you're also, as we established, an engineer. So how does that background between personal and professional influence how you approach projects and team collaboration?
I'm a father of six.
You got me beat.
And, you know, each one of your kids, you love them all equally. Yeah. Each one has a different gift to the family, right? Yeah. And there are times where you leverage everybody's individual gifts in order to move the family forward. And I would say that my oldest daughter was great in making sure that all the other kids were in alignment, right? Then my third child, who's my next daughter, was really good in making sure that everybody heard the instructions. And you just kind of leverage that throughout. And I think that that formation with my family from a personal experience really helped bring this together. Because even within the team here that we developed for Nexus Park, everyone I knew had a talent that at time I had to lean on, not just to be my voice, but to be the voice and the experience for the entire team.
That's great. Tim, can you describe the design challenge of transforming 25% of this mall into a health hub that consolidated 15 physician practices?
I first want to just go back and give Dave a little bit more credit than he's giving himself, you know, right? I hear him saying I leaned a lot on people, and I think from an architect's position, team culture is created from the top down a lot of times. And we experience that, and oftentimes the people that we love working with, and Dave is one of those that we love working with, create that culture from the top down. And so I just want to make sure I shout out to you, Dave, on really creating that vision of what you wanted the team to look like. But back to your question, challenges, wow. There were a lot of them. I mean, I think one was, Dave described this, there were a bunch of different clinics all over the city that had their individual way of working. And we had to not only understand their current state, so we went out and painstakingly walked in their clinics and tried to understand how they were working from arrival, which is really the check-in process, to treatment, which is the exam process, to disposition, which is checkout, and try to move that back towards a one standard. That was a huge, huge ordeal. I think the other challenges we had, one was just the footprint. To the footprint of one of the anchor stores, and I think about 180 feet by 350 feet. That's a huge footprint. So we didn't create that footprint. It was given to us, and it created really long runs of exam rooms. The length of it created distances from the parking lot. And we're still getting some comments back on that through the surveys. But that was a challenge. I think I mentioned the volume before, it was over 20 feet. It was both a blessing and a curse. I think I'll just give you an example. Like typically we run exam room walls all the way to deck just for acoustics. And that wasn't happening in a 20-foot volume. So those are some challenges. The existing conditions, another one was we had to change out all the air handler units to have better air movement and all of that. And the structure wasn't set up for that. So we had to go modify the roof structure where each of those was located. We had to also slab on grade, so in order to run any plumbing, you have to trench the floors. I think everyone that's around construction understands that, but it's painful. And then I would say the last one was something also we didn't control, which was this little thing called COVID. We went on hold for about a year, and they pulled the team back together.
Interesting. So I understand you guys use some fascinating tools along the way. FlexSim simulations, empathy mapping. David, can you walk us through how these informed your design decisions along the way?
Sure. Like Tim pointed out, transforming and trying to standardize all the practices was going to be huge. And it was a big, big deal. And I think the challenge to us was trying to, one, understand again, because volume-wise, this is something we've never done before, but then also trying to change the mindset of our staff. And they needed information, not just a direction. So when we were trying to understand what would be the best approach for the check-in, check-out arrangement, you couldn't really trial that with the volume that we were projecting. So that's where the simulation came into huge benefit to us, to be able to say, here's what we know. We already know how your patients are coming and presenting to your practice, but this is how they're doing it in aggregate. And this is what it would do to the flows of patient rooms and queuing and alike. And it really helped us move forward with confidence. So those sort of tools that are now in the tool chest of BSA has been very beneficial. I remember talking to Tim in some back warehouse corner, and Tim says, well, what do you think about doing a simulation on that? I said, that's genius. Let's figure that one out.
What did that centralized versus decentralized registration analysis, what did that reveal?
One, that there was a benefit in the mechanics, but it still lent itself to a challenge to how our practices were each individually utilizing a check-in process. So a lot of things were uncovered. In our particular case, we decided to default to the practice operational model, but now it's getting reevaluated again, saying, hey, maybe we have to go back to looking at this centralized opportunity.
Interesting. Okay. So this question is for each of you. How did lean principles guide your approach throughout the project?
When it comes to lean, I feel like, again, Dave H gets a lot of credit. So I feel like I'm living out or talking about a lot of things that he set in place. And one of them is just creating a really clear conditions of satisfaction. And one of the reasons I wanted to get this on the podcast is when we got back the results of, they put together a little presentation, I think it was for his leadership team, of just how we did on the conditions of satisfaction. I was blown away at all of the things the project accomplished. And I think it was just because we were laser focused on that, which was really amazing. I would say a couple other thoughts here. Gemba walks, the idea of getting out and actually walking where the work is done was really valuable, not only for us, but to develop kind of a common language with the user groups and be able to get them towards this idea of standardization, which is the next one. So flexibility for the use of the exam room to increase utilization. One of the things that I was really interested in with the flex and modeling was all of these practices were used to doctors owning certain exam rooms. And we kind of came in and said, you don't own them. You just utilize them, which is a big conceptual change for them. And so we were interested in, well, how many exam rooms do you really need? And if we're going to save money here, this might be an opportunity to do that. So we did a lot of operational flow planning, and it resulted in an on-stage, off-stage model, which is where the patients come into the exam room from one side and the providers come in from the other, and you kind of keep those worlds separate. And that was a big change, a cultural change, but I think from a flow standpoint, really, it's a valid model and has some real upsides to it. The big room, they set up a big room that was really an amazing asset for the team. And he talked about this idea of, no matter who you are, if you have an idea, you have a voice at the table. And that big room in the mall was an old storefront. And
it was like an Orange Julius.
Yeah. I think it was a clothing store.
Right. There you go.
There were some changing rooms that we took calls in, but that ended up being just a great place for the team. I think the stakeholder input, we talked about all stakeholders, collaboration, open communication, shared problem solving. And then finally, I would just say like this A3 format, which is kind of a structured problem solving. So we used it, maybe not a ton, but just enough to when there was an important decision to kind of document that decision.
I think the other thing too, which was great that we did, was a lot of prototyping and creating those cardboard worlds. So that way the staff could experience what was happening when we did offstage, onstage, offstage. And it really helped us in that transformation, because if you could give them that physical nature to kind of touch and experience, it gives them a level of confidence moving forward. I think that was huge. And the other big thing was standardization. Hey, we're going on stage, off stage, and everybody's doing it. Yeah. And we're doing this in exam room, and everybody's doing it. And so when you're leaning out things, it made constructability much more predictable.
Yeah.
A lot easier to execute. It made the awareness when staff really started getting into the space, I'm going to say more comfortable, because they knew an exam room was an exam room was an exam room was an exam room. And it wasn't Dr. So-and-so's exam room, which has different elements.
All right.
So we really worked towards lowering staff's anxiety into the space. One, having them involved in design. So they did sign-ons on conceptual, on DD, while they were seeing it on paper. And we spent hours with them just trying to get that done. And then walking through at various stages of construction, because I said, I will have a failure in this project if one staff member comes to me after they walk in the space and said, I don't know where I'm at.
Yep.
That would have been a failure.
Right.
So we were very intentional to make sure that we were getting people through and they were understanding what was being done. And then when you could bring them into a space when it's just gutted and nothing, and then show them where you have studs, and then when you have drywall and
right.
you have paint, you start to build that excitement for everybody to yeah. adopt that environment. So I think those were some of the key things, even though they're not perfectly lean, but they were a methodology to encourage and really get excitement to staff adopting, you know, their new environment.
Absolutely. I don't know if you've ever built a house, but when you're going through that process of building a house and you're taking your family there every few weeks, it's like, this is where your room's going to be and this is where the kitchen is. And like you said, it gets some excitement, it gets some buy-in. People start picturing how they're going to live and work and play in the space. So great idea. Tim had mentioned this a minute ago, but David, you developed a scorecard of measurables. So I'd like for you to share us a little bit about the quadruple aim and how you used it to measure success, and were the conditions of satisfaction, other guiding principles met?
There were many times while we were doing our AEC meeting, and we kept conditions of satisfaction and guiding principles posted in our meeting rooms. And when we would come to a question, we would ask, okay, are we meeting one of the guiding principles or one of the conditions of satisfaction overall? And sometimes we were making a decision and we weren't probably quite getting it. One of the things that I know had to do with working on our well building, right? And trying to make sure that the environment was well set for our staff. And there's a lot of focus that goes into the patient environment, which is great. But the patient experience overall may only be 45 minutes tops, where the staff experience is 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 260 days a year. So we need to build the environment with that level of intentionality in mind as well. So when we were looking at well-building potential standards, that daylight like Tim brought in and keeping the use of the skylights was huge. Yeah. Then when we started seeing, hey, this particular service doesn't have a skylight for staff, we'll put one in. They go, you sure you want to do that? Yeah, that's part of what we're doing here, right? So we did all of this work, which I think was well executed along the way. But at the end, with many projects, you get busy to the next one. But I wanted to really go back because honestly, I love the people that we had on this job. I thought we did some fantastic work. It's been a great thing for the community. But how did we really do in the end game? So we did do a hard job of measuring improvements towards how we were utilizing space, how we were meeting some of the well-building things, how we were looking at planning and budget and the whole scope of work. And wow, we nailed close to all of them.
Wow.
But in all honesty, I could say that we weren't 100%.
Sure.
That's okay. It's not to say that you're going to be perfect right out of the bat. You got to just be honest.
Right.
And then you take where you may have not hit all of your marks and say, well, did I lose out because of that? It's a great learning step for going forward too. So I like the intentionality we put at the end just to make sure that we were doing what we said we were going to do.
And you had this, what feels like, I mean, between the consolidation you both mentioned a couple of times, hey, this exam room is not Dr. So-and-so's anymore. It's a cultural shift in a whole lot of different ways, going from many locations to one consolidated facility. What was that like? What's it been like, that shift?
Honestly, it's seeing some really pleasant evolution. You're starting to see that environment. They are talking to one another and they're doing fun events. So like Christmas decorations, they have Christmas decorating contests at each of the check-in areas. They've done chili cook-offs. They've done Halloween decoration competitions. Try to build now a community. And I think that has served itself well, because as now we're trying to look at, I'm going to say, other changes that we want to do operationally throughout the system. Nexus Park helps us to implement those things now in more of a community manner. So honestly, the transformation, I think, has been well set in laying that foundation for future change going forward.
And there was another shift from treating sickness to kind of fostering wellness. Tim, from your perspective, how does the physical design support that philosophy?
Yeah, you know, this is one of my favorite subjects. I'm not a physician, obviously, but I have some family that's involved in healthcare. My mom was a registered nurse, and my three daughters are as well. And here's what I perceive that I wish could be different. And it feels like sometimes our medical process is set up around some kind of onset of decline, and then there's a diagnosis, and then some kind of intervention, monitoring response, you know. And I wish there was more proactive wellness about, like, this continuous awareness, encouraging daily nurturing practices, building resilience or kind of prevention, and then just like a focus on thriving. And so I went back and read the project brief on this, and Dave, this is where I give you a lot of credit. I don't know how this came together, but it says, the vision of the City of Columbus is to use this site as a primary location for parks and rec services, inclusive of indoor sports complex for large team sports. So that was one component of this, is you had an entity that was responsible for that, teaming together with another entity, which was the vision of Columbus Regional Health or Hospital, is to use this site to complement the wellness aspects of sports and extend the use into health services. These visions intend to complement each other to promote convenience, accessibility, and promote lifestyle changes to the overall community health. Sat back after I reread that again, and I was like, what a statement, and what an investment by visionaries in a community bringing together two entities to accomplish one purpose. And I think what I've seen a lot of is healthcare entities trying to do it all themselves. I thought what was interesting about this model is the healthcare entity is not trying to be the sports entity, but they're teaming together in a really interesting way. And so how that comes together in the architecture is it's one seamless relationship. Like, if you walk in the building, you really don't know where one stops and where one starts. So to me, that was what was just really incredible, not only about the vision of this, but essentially how it got implemented.
Yeah, that's kind of what I want to touch on next with you, David, is you've mentioned this project's had an impact on the community. It exemplifies breathing new life into spaces that have passed their original lifespan. So what has this meant to Columbus as a community?
I think what it's done is showed at least the community that both the city and Columbus Regional is very interested in continuing on investment. Investment in the community, yeah, is one thing, but I'm going to say it's more spurring the next evolution, the next generation of what we hope the community excels at. I think the cities and the parks and recreations efforts towards sports tourism is a fine example of trying to draw and attract more people into Columbus itself. And then for us to say, for the community at large, here's a central hub to where we could address 80% of your health needs on an ongoing day-to-day basis. I think that those sort of thoughtful investments and changes within the community are probably the most valuable and hopefully appreciated sentiments that the community could recognize.
Well, and then what's been the response from the patients and the healthcare providers that are using the space?
I'm going to say that nothing's perfect. However, it's appreciated. So I think we've received a lot of positive comments back from patients with regard to the environment, knowing that it looks professional, that changes in operations because of going with the onstage, offstage were more timely now in our ability to meet patients' appointment times. From the providers' aspects, I think that their ability to collaborate with their medical assistants and other providers has greatly improved their ability to help work with their patients. The fact that I have a pediatrics clinic right next to an OB clinic.
Yeah.
They do a lot of collaboration back and forth just because they're seeing the transition of that patient throughout. And then tagged onto that goes to family practice. So patients can experience, I'm going to say, a full life cycle of care there now. And that's something that you can't say is evident in many areas across the country.
No, that's pretty impressive too. I mean, as fathers of large families, it would be nice to be able to get up to one place for all of your treatment needs. Yeah. Tim, I've got a two-parter for you here. From a design perspective, what are you most proud of in terms of your involvement with this transformation? And then were there any lessons from this project that you've been able to apply to other projects you've worked on?
Yeah, I think to answer the first question, I'll just go back and state it simply. It's doing great work and building meaningful relationships. We've talked a lot about the relationship piece, so I'll go into a little bit more of the design piece, which is the meaningful work. You know, I think one of the things I love doing is going to a building after it's open and seeing how it's actually used. And I've had opportunity to do that on a couple of occasions with this particular project. It's super rewarding seeing the activity that's been there and also understanding how this previously dead part of the city is starting to come alive. That's an exciting piece of this from the design side. This isn't everything, but I think it's a nod to what we were able to do. It did receive two AIA Indiana Healthcare Design Awards, one for adaptive reuse, renovation, interior architecture, and the other for healthcare planning and applied research. And that was that flex and modeling piece of it. On a maybe a more kind of micro level, Dave mentioned this earlier about staff work in this space a lot of the days and has some of the nicest staff break rooms that have access to outdoors in one case, have access to natural light in the other, and incorporating all of the skylights and adding new ones. I love what we were able to do from that standpoint. In terms of lessons learned, it's less technical and more leadership oriented, which is why it's on the podcast. I'm interested in what makes teams work. And this, like, design and construction is one of the most team oriented activities or businesses you could possibly have. I would say teamwork, no matter what the contract, created a culture of collaboration, communication, and cooperation. I think Dave and his leadership and CRH was just amazing at creating kind of a platform for that. You know, I think the other piece of it is that I learned in this process is how to shape consensus. And Dave was talking about this earlier. I think moving people to a standard exam room, moving people to on stage, off stage model, those are big, huge things. And I came across this quote from Martin Luther King recently that I just love. He says that a genuine leader is not a searcher for consensus, but a molder of consensus. And I feel like kind of backing out of this whole process, Dave and the team, we were molders of consensus. We weren't trying to search for it. We were actually helping push it in a certain direction based on what else was out there, based on simulation modeling and so forth.
That's really good. David, is there anything from this project moving forward in terms of what it means for the future of Columbus Regional Health?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we learned is that building the culture of the team is more important than the project itself. When you could get the minds invested to the development of the project, and you could pull out the ideas from all the different team members and synthesize that to the project, now everybody's invested, everybody's excited by, and everybody wants to move everything forward. And I think that's by and large what we were able to accomplish on this project and what we try to instill in the next projects. Is I know you guys are all technically competent, right? You guys have been doing this stuff for years. But how are you going to be invested into the project? And as an owner, I need to make sure that your ideas are celebrated for what their value is to the project. Encourage others to say, hey, throw your idea in the hat and let's build something around it, okay? And as we do that, we find that these projects move at a greater speed, a greater level of acceptability with everybody. And it's not just the designers, it's also the people that are going to move in and own the space.
Right.
So that's what I want to replicate with my projects always going forward.
So as we wrap up, I'm curious if your answers will be similar based off how you've talked with each other the whole time, or if they might be a little different. But for other health systems, maybe looking at some similar type of transformation, what advice would you give?
Probably going to be a little bit high level on this, which is I think that the first thing is be a placemaker. And I think that healthcare's role in stitching together city fabric rather than being an island in the sea. Like I see a lot of islands in the sea with healthcare. And one of the amazing things on this was it was like part of the city fabric and it was healing the city in a way. The second is this idea around reuse and healthcare's place in reusing existing buildings. I think we have to ask the question of, do we need a new building for this? Is there something that we can reuse? And I get it. Healthcare is super specialized. The floor-to-floor heights, the MEP systems, all of that is super specialized. So sometimes it really doesn't work, but in this case, it did. And then the last is just kind of circling back to what Dave was just talking about, which is the culture. You know, life is about meaningful work and building great relationships. And there's a better way to create teams.
I think my greatest takeaway from this is something that I'm going to speak to every owner about right now. As owners, we're always told to protect the organization, right? Make sure that you keep your dollars under wrap. Make sure that you're doing just what you're told. Make sure that X, Y, and Z is being done. And going through this IPD-ish cycle, the thing that I had to do is to lend myself into total trust with my team members, and I had to let go. I had to be just a member of the team, not necessarily the quarterback of the team. So putting that trust into, you know, our SMT and saying, okay, where should we be at with budget? Where should we be at with our progress? Where should we be with this particular decision? And Tim would probably even say, yeah, Dave really kind of sometimes said he had to take a lot of Tums in order to get through that next decision. But I relied heavily on everybody that was there. And in the end, it was fine. I was more relieved on the backside because I knew I had good people looking out for me as much as I was supposed to be looking out for the organization.
Yeah.
So it's placing trust into the teamers you brought on. If you could let go of some of that control, share it with the people that you have on the team, I'm going to tell you that you're going to make your job, I'm not necessarily easier, but it's going to be
right.
much more pleasant and enjoyable. So make your job enjoyable.
And less Tums, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's great advice from both of you. I want to thank you both for coming on. This has been a great conversation. And best of luck to you, David. And we look forward to maybe being able to chat with you again in the future.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
I'd like to thank Tim and David again for joining me on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with them each on LinkedIn. If you want to learn more about BSA, we encourage you to visit our website at bsadesign.com. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information. Be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music so you don't miss an episode. And be sure to check out BSA on social media, including LinkedIn and YouTube. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.